Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino, and I am very excited to be kicking off our season 40 preseason coverage with the first of two nights of back-to-back roundtable panels, as we will be doing a five-part series profiling the winners at war returning for season 40 of Survivor. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the past games of the idols, Rob, Sandra, and Amber. We're going to talk about their chances here in season 40, how they might approach the game, what their chances are, and we're going to do it live. Let's bring in our panel to help us talk about these three players in particular. All right, let's welcome here, talking with me for the first time about Survivor, Mr. Brian Scally. Scally, how are you?
I am good. Excited to finally be talking about a season that I think most of us have been waiting for eagerly for the what feels like a year almost about now.
Yeah, good while. At least 8 months in the offing to get to this point. Of course, we are doing this live on video here on Tuesday night. You can check out the video on our YouTube channel at robhasawebsite.com/YouTube or in the post on robhasawebsite.com. Okay, joining me back once again on another roundtable. We spoke about the circle on Thursday night. Here she is. She's back. Jessica Lise. Jessica, how are you?
Wait a second. I thought we were interviewing Rob and Sandra and Amber. I quit. I'm out. Sorry.
Hey, smarten up.
Oh, there he is. Okay. Good to be here, Rob. Sandra, Amber, thanks for having me on.
Yes. All right. And then also with us here tonight, very excited to have back one of the number one Boston Rob super fans around. Please welcome back Frail Mary. Mary Kwiatkowski. Mary, how are you?
I'm doing great. Just came off a month and a half of talking about Survivor All-Stars. So I'm ready for this. You couldn't have just lumped together Ethan in this podcast for me. That would have been nice and easy.
Mary, where were you talking about Survivor All-Stars for a month and a half?
Oh, I'm starting to release them on my podcast on Kowski Cast. We got some All-Star talk with me and Matt Liguori. So if you want even more of that, actually, this is like in-depth strategy, probably. That is just like fangirling. So if you just want fangirling over Boston Rob.
Okay. What did you do? Go back episode by episode to watch Survivor All-Stars?
Yeah, we just completely ripped off the TEOS.
Okay, well, for a number of reasons, I heard that that's not that much fun to go back through all the episodes of Survivor All-Stars.
Yeah, you know, to each their own. I liked it.
Okay, all right. So we're going to take some of your questions here live, hashtag RHAP. We can also take your questions in the YouTube comments, but I got to be honest, if I'm going to be reading through the YouTube comments, I'm going to get distracted from what the panel is saying. So let's, if you have questions that you'd like to have integrated into the show, let's save those for the end. Same thing, hashtag RHAP. You can tweet those out, and then I will take a look for them. And I also have a number of questions from our Rob is a Podcast patron Facebook group from earlier in the day that we'll talk about the games of Rob and Sandra and Amber, of course, that we have a two-night event here. We'll be back again tomorrow night with another panel. We will be talking about some of the players that we thought we might never see back on Survivor. Ethan, Yule, Danny, and Sophie coming up tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific. But hey, winners at war, right? Well, oh my God. Can you believe that we're here, Jess?
This is like someone's fan fiction fever dream come to life. I can't believe they actually put this together. Finally.
Yeah. It's wild that for years, Jeff Probst said, hey, I'm never going to talk about the winner. It was too boring. We can't do it. But here we are with 10 men and 10 women winners who are back to play. Now, I do think that this particular night of talking about with Rob and Sandra in particular is interesting because we just saw a season with Rob and Sandra featured so prominently. Scally, is this Rob and Sandra overload?
I would say some people may feel that way, but given the scenes that we got with them last time, I don't necessarily. I would say that they probably weren't the most insightful scenes into Rob and Sandra's capabilities. So I'm excited to have them back here in whatever capacity they're in.
Mary, do you have any thoughts on how Robin Sandra's time out in Fiji in season 39 might prep them for season 40?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think that them going back, even just being able to watch the tribal councils or talk to some people, is a bit of an unfair advantage going into this, just because they know a lot of the types of twists or even just ways people talk now about Survivor and at a very firsthand experience. When they were first announced to be on season 39, I thought that that was like, oh, okay, so they're not coming back from season 40, but they're willing to come out again and do this. So they were, them along with Amber, were the biggest shocks for me that they were even coming back on this season personally. You say that's next week's podcast, but to me, I was blown away.
Yeah. That it was, I think for me, a huge shock that Amber ends up being on this list when the list first got leaked back in May after they left. I couldn't believe that Amber was back out there, because I wasn't necessarily shocked that Amber would play again, but to have her and Rob both be out there on the same season to leave their family both together, I really was shocked that was this Survivor world that we're living in.
I mean, again, anything can happen, I guess. I was really shocked to see them both out at the same time. I honestly didn't think Amber had any interest in playing again. It sure seemed to me like that would have happened by now if it was going to happen. So to have this go on, like going on, you know, more than 15 years since the last time we saw her on our screens, I just kind of figured she had settled down and was doing the mom thing and was completely content to let Rob be the Survivor star and let everybody kind of conveniently forget that she was a winner.
Yeah, I mean, it was very, very surprising. I mean, I know Rob a little bit better than I know Amber, that believe it or not, I did actually spend time on Survivor with both of them. That a lot of people, fun fact, a lot of people don't know that. For a couple of days, I spent time with Rob and Amber on Survivor. But I just felt that, yeah, I thought that just in talking with Rob, I didn't think that Amber seemed like that she was particularly invested in coming back. And I thought that she would want Rob to just go out there and she could just live her life. But I'm not sure, maybe that it was too enticing of an offer to come back, or maybe she had it in her that Mary, do you think that maybe Amber wanted to get back out there and play one more time?
Yeah, I kind of hope that with Amber, it's I do hope that she comes out and that there's a part of her that says, I want to prove that I'm not just the girl who married Boston Rob and who was the person who happened to win over him in All Stars. I really hope that she brings a bit of the fire that she had when you look back at like their time on The Amazing Race. Mm-hmm. She was definitely very competitive and a huge part of the team with him in that. So I hope that she's coming out trying to play hard and not just see how long she can last, because I do think that separate her from Boston Rob, she'll be underestimated and she's not dead in the water.
So, Skelly, this is kind of interesting that we have a Boston Rob coming back in this season with his real wife and then also kind of like his work spouse from season 39.
Yeah, I'm curious to see the dynamics should they ever end up on a tribe together. But I was really shocked to see, I mean, really all three, but especially Amber show up here. So I'm very curious to see how that dynamic plays out. Do they end up, Amber and Sandra end up being close because of that connection? And how does that play out?
So, all right, let's touch on just one big thing before we get to the season 40 starting. For Rob and Sandra, that they played season 39, nobody knew that they were out there except for the cast. Unfortunately, Jess, for Rob and Sandra's sake, on April 24th, there was a leak of, hey, everybody, guess what? Season 38 is all about Rob and Sandra. How do you think that this information is going to impact the games of Rob and Sandra now that the other winners potentially may not have known? You know, you never know, but it was well reported by the internet leakers that Rob and Sandra were a part of season 38.
Well, you have to think that Rob and Sandra are already coming into this game with the biggest possible targets on their backs, as the people who have cumulatively, like, they hold all the records. It's like, It's like being told you're going to go play Jeopardy with like Ken Jennings and James Holzhauer. And then to think that they had all this time together to talk it out. But here's the question that I have. And maybe this is something that people can answer for me. And maybe this was already answered and everybody already knows it. But now we know that people going into season 40 knew ahead of time that Rob and Sandra had been out there on the island for season 39 and had spent a lot of time together and had presumably been talking to each other and become very friendly. But my question is, while they were out on the island, did they know they would be coming back for season 40?
I think it's a good question. I don't know if they knew for sure, but I suspect that they did know, Jess. I think it's been well documented that it looked like, Rob and Sandra held up pretty well over 36, 37 days in this past season. I think that they were sort of, not forced and tested to their limits, because I think they knew they had a return trip to Fiji coming.
Yeah, I don't think that this was like, I think that it was part of the package deal, or at the very least something that they knew was a strong possibility when they went out that first time.
Yeah,
I think one had to be contingent on the other. I have to think like, okay, we'll come play the all winter season if you let us have a season where we are the stars. Or the other way around, like we will play the all winter season. You will come out and do this thing if we also do the all winter season.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that I don't know what these deals look like in terms of, what Survivor, if they really want somebody to be a part of something, what they might be able to offer somebody who comes back. And then if they are not going to do the same thing for everybody, but it is an interesting thing to think about, like what could have done for Rob and Sandra for season 39 that wasn't necessarily part of season 40. So maybe that no matter what, Rob and Sandra come out ahead for season 40, knowing that they have big targets on their back coming into this other season. All right, so let's talk about them, and let's start to talk about them a little bit more as single entities. And so that's a little easier to do when we're talking about Sandra. Sandra returns to the game after very interesting third run in the game. The one time that she didn't win the game, Survivor Game Changers. I think that it's, pretty well established how Sandra, what the book is on Sandra. Anybody but me, she's always going to be somebody who's overlooked, gets her way to the end and ends up winning. But in Survivor Game Changers, I feel like that we saw a very different Sandra Diaz-Twine. And I wonder if we might end up getting a similar Sandra, Queen Stays Queen Sandra, or a little bit more of the OG Sandra. Scally, do you have any thoughts on which Sandra do you think we're more likely to see?
Well, I think that what we saw in Game Changers is that Sandra recognizes that there are other big targets out there, and that in order to have any shot, even when you're playing with all winners, she's the only one that stands out as the only person to have won the game twice. So if you're going to align yourself with the big targets like she tried to earlier in Game Changers, then that's all well and good. But if that falls apart, like it did in one commercial break in Game Changers, then she seems very willing to pick up the remaining pieces and lead an alliance like that we may have not seen in earlier seasons by her.
Jess, the Sandra Game Changers actual game, how do we look at it a couple of years after now that it's over? I mean, it was a very exciting TV, but I don't know what to make of it now, two some odd years later.
Well, I think Brian makes an interesting
3 years later,
point.
It'll be actually.
Yeah. Time flies. Mm-hmm. I think Brian makes a very interesting point that Sandra found herself in a position where she had to be in the driver's seat and actually make game moves that actually push the game forward instead of being a very reactive player, which she had been, I think, her first two times out. I think in both Pearl Islands and Heroes versus Villains, she was looking at what was happening around everybody else. And anytime she would try to make a move, it wouldn't work out for her, and she ended up winning, especially Heroes versus Villains. She ends up winning that game on the strength of the other moves that people made everybody else angry. And I think putting her in a position in Game Changers where she had to be the architect of some of these moves was a very different place for her. And she was also, I think some hubris was also at play with Sandra in her third time out. She seemed very, I guess the term is high on her own supply.
Mm-hmm.
All of the branding and the like hashtagging the queen stays queen. I feel like I don't, if I wanted to watch people spouting catchphrases, I would watch an 80s sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And it was not the Sandra, like I'm used to her being kind of sassy. I'm not used to her trying to brand herself. And I think maybe she got a little too caught up in that. And that could have contributed to her downfall. But I also think that most of Sandra's problem in Game Changers was getting dealt a bad hand.
Yeah, it was a bad spot, I think, for her to come back overall, Mary, that she comes back as one of, you know, the biggest threats that are on the board. It was a weird season where this is all winners, you know, and certainly there are some winners who are more highly celebrated than the others. But Game Changers was a weird season that you had a two-time winner in Sandra. You had somebody like Beast Mode Cowboy, who's medevaced out of the game and on day 12. And it just was a season where she really stood out in terms of the targets that were on the board.
Yeah, I hate to say this just because I feel like some people think it's a cop out, but I really do feel like for Sandra, much in the same way that people were saying Tony coming back, it was like his target was so big, he was kind of dead in the water. With Sandra, I feel like coming back for Heroes versus Villains, she was the winner you didn't see coming, and so she had the ability to win again. But when she has just come off several years of being the only two-time winner, I mean, at that point, it's almost as big as the girl who voted out her mom or whatever. So almost. I think that she went out to say, okay, I'm going to play differently. I'm going to try something else. I'm probably not going to win, so I'm just going to go big or go home. I think that's where the catchphrases come in. It's very Will Kirby, make your target super big, see if that just lets you get by and ride it out. And so I feel like she's learned from that and will probably come down a little bit for this one. I think we're definitely going to get a game closer to that than either of her other two, but we'll see, because Heroes versus Villains was a chance she had to play with arguably bigger players than were in Game Changers, or bigger personalities. So maybe she'll sink back a little once there's more people out in front again. But I don't think that it was just circumstantial. I think at some point it's kind of like when you're the only two-time winner and you're coming back for your third time, people are going to want to take you out just for that threat level. Just even if she sat there and did nothing all game, people would still want to do that.
Scout, do you think that Sandra did try in Game Changers to, you know, make the target on herself even so big that a la Dr. Willett got invisible?
I feel like at a certain point, it was kind of the only option that she had, especially once, I mean, she tries to work with Tony, and I love Tony, but he kind of gave her no option, into where then she is working with like the Michaelas and Troy Zans and just people that no matter how much she tries to hide in the background, like it's not possible. And so she needs to take control of an alliance and does so really effectively until she's ultimately swapped and doesn't have the numbers anymore. And then it was just, there's no cards to play once she's dealt that hand.
Jess, in my mind, I feel like that Sandra did play in season 34 with a chip on her shoulder, that I felt like that she came back and was almost tired of being disrespected, that she won two games. And I think that people still said there was a narrative of, well, she's not actually that good. And I do feel like that she came out in that season with trying to prove the naysayers wrong.
Yeah, I think where a lot of the Queen Stays Queen stuff is coming from. I think it's a defensive Queen Stays Queen. It's saying, yeah, I did these things. And I think she did get a lot of criticism. I think like there's a particular segment of the fandom, and maybe it's kind of the big moves fandom that mm-hmm. says, if you're not driving the action all of the time, you can't possibly be a good player. And Sandra has proven that wrong, I think, over and over. But yeah, it's also not a visible game. It's not a game that's played from the pilot position. And it's not one that I think there's a certain level of criticism that's leveled at a game where you're not the alpha person in the main alliance. And then those same people turn around and complain when someone does a Boston Rob and plays that game all the way through. So yeah, you can't make anybody happy.
Isn't it interesting that, I mean, I feel like that Sandra is this contradiction where she played these two first games where she is, you know, to quote the Edge of Extinction, the, you know, the passenger for two seasons, ends up winning and then comes back and then ends up playing this game where, okay, she's going to be the pilot. She's going to be the author of a number of these big moves, and then easily is her worst performance. But then just, I think that this was also her most celebrated season by the show.
I think she had some great moments, and the show kind of lingered very lovingly. I think she got a better edit than she had either of her two other times out. I think Pearl Island, she was invisible and sassy and then invisible again. And then Heroes versus Villains, she was always kind of, she was in that defensive position the whole time. And then she comes out in Game Changers and they're just like, we're going to celebrate every minute of Sandra that we get because she is a national treasure. And so we get things. I think the thing from Game Changers that I think is the most pivotal Sandra moment is probably the point at which she lets Michaela take the fall for eating all of the sugar left over from the reward challenge.
Yes.
And this echoes, she did almost the exact same thing back in Pearl Islands with the fish getting knocked over. Mm-hmm. And it was like that flash of classic Sandra.
Poor Krista.
And the show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Poor Krista. And poor Michaela, for that matter.
Yeah. In the case of Michaela, they still end up getting JT voted out because of it. Yeah. So she ends up...
her life is fine.
Her life is fine. In the case of Krista, she ends up going home in that round. So ultimately it worked
out. Two episodes later.
Yeah.
I thought it was that round.
Oh, okay. And she gets another one. Is that Tawana goes home first?
Yeah, I had to actually write an article about this ahead of season 39, and I went back to that moment because I wanted to break it down beat by beat and see what happened there and see how similar it was to Game Changers. And in my opinion, I think it's very similar.
Okay.
I have seen from Sandra, though, that she's really good at playing when she can play from the bottom, especially when she can play from the bottom against an opponent. Like when she is the anti Russell person or the anti Burton person or Johnny Fairplay or whoever, or even Will at the end, when she can be that person and rally some underlings around them and do that, she can play very well. And I know that people say it's anybody but me. I don't think it's exactly anybody but me. And I think that it's more I don't care who you target as long as it's not me and some other people and preferably these people. So it's not as cut and dry as she wants it to be. But when she came into Game Changers and didn't have a strong opponent to go against, and then also didn't have a leader to fall behind because she got Tony out immediately.
Right.
Should have probably kept him.
I honestly think Tony could have been that foil for her if he'd stuck around long enough.
She fought too hard too early.
Yeah, she was too good. She was too good. She got him out too early.
Yeah.
She needed, I mean, I guess she was lucky in the case of, you know, Heroes versus Villains that she was never able to get Russell, and Russell was able to stick around. The same with Johnny Fairplay. Tony, she was, you know, had too sharp of a knife. She was able to just take him out on the second vote in that season. But guess what? Guess who's back? It's time for a mulligan, maybe, Jess.
Yeah, well, like, here's the question. Who out there in the field could be that foil for Sandra? I think Tony is the obvious contender. Do we have anybody else that she could be picking fights with?
I don't know.
Pick a fight with Ben. Pick anybody you want to. Pick a fight against Parvati. I mean, she's done that before. Like, but you just need the person. She needs that person to stick around for a little while. She doesn't actually want them to go home. She just needs them to be there so that she can be anti them.
But there's a lot of winners here. There's a lot of people here that have gotten to the end because nobody was anti them. And there's going to be too many diplomatic personalities here. Like, you can't just be, I'm the anti Kim Spradlin. Like, I'm the anti-Denise Stapley. That's not going to work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need somebody who's going to push back and then also get worked up against Sandra. And it worked so well with Russell and with Johnny Fairplay. And Tony is that perfect person, but she was able to gun for him too much. And what's interesting, Scally, is that they went on the pre-jury trip together in season 34. I have no idea what that relationship is like.
Yeah, it's wild. I have been back and forth on whether I think that maybe it's just like a secret. I did go back and listen to Sandra's most recent podcast with you. Mm-hmm. And even in that, I'm confused for how their relationship is. She's like, oh, Tony still frustrates me. So annoying. But then it's like, oh, we got really close over the trip. So I really don't. I cannot see them living in close quarters and Tony just not getting on Sandra's nerves. Like, I don't see that happening. So I don't know once they're actually on the same beach together how that's going to go. But you would think that spending that many days together would bond them at least to work a little bit towards the beginning.
Okay, let's start to look ahead now with Sandra in terms of season 40. Mary, do you have an idea of which Sandra, the more passive Sandra or the more aggressive Sandra, do you expect to show up on the beach in season 40?
I expect that she will. I think that she will have learned a little bit. I think that she will try to win more this time than she did last time. So I think that she will see a little bit more heroes versus villains, Sandra. Mm-hmm. I think that she has enough people out there that she likes and has friendships with that are also big personalities and targets that she can kind of get in with them as opposed to having to lead them. And I think when she's able to be in that position, I would love to see her start the game first half, you know, heroes versus villains, Sandra. And then somewhere, you know, if she can make it past the merge, that's when she can start playing game changers, Sandra, mix it up, stab some of those people in the back and start, you know, framing people like she did Michaela or whatever. Do some of those sly moves that we know she can do. Just hang on a little bit and wait till a little farther. And I think that she'll be fine with that. And I think if she plays her cards right, she can take some of the things she saw in 39 just with the very new school survivor and, you know, use those to, you know, have some insight to some of these older school players who haven't been here for a while.
Scally, how does Sandra avoid being a target early on in this game?
I think she's really got to, you know, like suck it up and start working with some of those other bigger names. And that's going to take like even if she hears that, let's say, you know, let's say Tony again or someone is, you know, says her name or one time or whatever, like try to repair that rather than burning the bridge immediately. And I need to see that she is first capable of that with someone that is a larger personality, because it's been very much a pattern where once you're done, you're kind of done with Sandra.
Jess, I'm worried about Sandra here.
The signs are not looking good for Sandra. I think she's just too big a target with too much mythology to her name. And I think people are going to be afraid of that. And I don't know what she possibly does to make people think that she is, that she does not have the toolbox that we know she does. I think her strengths are obviously that she's extremely stealthy and she has, and she's going to fly off the handle while simultaneously like being a very sneaky person who is, who has things going on that may or may not work. And I think that kind of volatility, I think she's not someone that you rely on to fall in with your plans. I think everybody's going to look at Sandra as someone that if I take her, if I don't take her out early, if she's with me to the end, she's going to pull the same thing she pulled on the people that she was with at the end of her other games. And if I, you know, if I make an enemy out of her, she's going to target me.
I really think that had she not come back for Game Changers, I feel like that she would be set up pretty well here. If she was coming off of, she won in Pearl Islands, she won in Heroes versus Villains, and then, okay, long layoff, and now here she is back for season 40. I kind of feel like you could forget about her, but it's just so, it's so ironic that her Game Changers game, I think, is going to stand out to people the most. And I think that she's going to need to be even more Game Changers-y, making up a word, in this season if she's to have a chance, Mary, than she was in that season. I think that she's got to hit the beach a million miles an hour.
I agree, but I think the moments that I was picking up on in Islands of the Idols were the moments, especially in the secret scenes, when you would see her talk to and about Rob in a, oh, I'm good, but Rob's even better. Oh, he's building the shelter. I can't do that. Or a little bit self-deprecating is not really the right word, but understanding that she's not the only good survivor player. Mm-hmm. And I think whereas when she came back for Game Changers, she had to be that big and she had to go with that because she was the only two-time winner. And at that point, she knows she's not going to win. So might as well just queen says queen and spout all that. If she can just embody a little bit of that and let some other people lead, then look, she's not gonna do well, don't get me wrong, but she has the ability to do okay-er than last place.
Yeah, okay, let's start to talk a little bit about stands and ops for Sandra. Okay. Jess, are there any Sandras that are out there that are there anybody? I feel like that Sandra keeps a very tight network of survivors and especially the winners. I feel like that for years she's talked about all of her friends that are the winners. Do you see people that are her key allies who are out there?
I mean, could it be that Sandra's been playing the long game?
Oh, she definitely has been. I can assure you.
Has she been strategizing an all winners season since her first win?
I would say, yeah, I don't know in those particular terms, but I think that she has a very deep network. But the question is, how many of her winner friends are out here?
I mean, that's a fair question. I mean, obviously she just spent a whole big chunk of a time out on the island with arguably the only person who's got a bigger target on its back than her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that's going to be a problem. But you also, I mean, she's never really disappeared from the community like some of these other winners have. Like some people just take their million and they go home and they don't really care if anybody ever revisits their season again. But I think Sandra's been out there. She's been active on social media. She was one of the earliest guests on Rob as a podcast, and yep, she's kept coming back until the time when she thought someone else was you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then when Johnny Fairplay also was shading her.
Yeah. There is that. There's no love lost there.
Yeah. Mary, I know you recently watched Survivor All-Stars, and I was going to ask you a heroes versus villains question. That is not the same season. But I'll ask you it anyway. That Sandra's relationship with Parvati, do you think that is a close relationship by the way that they ended up working together towards the end of that game? Or do you think that the Parvati should have won over Sandra discourse might be a little bit of a sore spot?
I don't think it's going to be a sore spot, but I could see Parvati and Amanda were close and then came back, mm-hmm, and we're fake close. So that's kind of the way I would see this going, more of, oh, I love Parvati, we got to get her out kind of thing. I think she's one of the people where it's just so clear to each other the threats that they each have that I don't see that being a thing that they're going to work together. If they're forced to for some reason, I think they could temporarily, but it's definitely going to be in that same sort of fake friends kind of way.
So you're saying it's more of a Parvati and Amanda in Heroes versus Villains,
yes,
kind of scenario.
Yes, yeah, like that.
I actually think that they might be, you know, on better terms than you would think. I spent this is like, you know, I don't know, 6 years ago that I went to a taping of, there was a round table. It was me, Cochran, Parvati and Sandra with Jeff Probst. It was all the greats of the game. And then also Mike White ended up showing up that day. But, you know, Parvati and Sandra got along great. I really feel like that, especially, and I know it's not the Parvati preview, but I think that she's going to certainly be looking for friendly faces that are out there. I actually think that might be a pairing that might be able to work together, Sandra and Parvati. Scally, who else are some people that might be, you know, okay with Sandra sticking around for a while?
Well, I think two of the obvious ones are Tyson and Rob worked really closely with her on Heroes vs. Villains. I haven't seen anything to indicate that they wouldn't want to work with her now. I think that obviously Sandra and Rob are tight. Rob and Tyson are super tight, and have to imagine Tyson and Sandra have a good relationship. I don't see any reason why they wouldn't. I know that I think there are players. What's going to work to Sandra's advantage is, like, I think someone like Parvati needs Sandra to be around for a little while. But I also think there are players like that are smaller, like a Sophie or an Adam, who are smart enough to know that, like, as long as Sandra's around, there's a much bigger target, while also probably not being, you know, the best in challenges, so I can argue that way. But it's better to have her there so the target doesn't shift onto you as easily.
It's really that first boot thing, though. It's like, you know, if they need to vote someone out for a second time, are they going to be more willing to keep that threat around just to, you know, run the risk of being voted out themselves?
You know, Jess, I think that a big factor in this season is going to be a lot of the, you know, old school and the new school players. And I wonder, when we talk about sort of like the new school players, the people that, you know, won in the 30s, the, you know, Adams and Nicks and Wendells, I feel like that they may have a reverence for Sandra and may not want to target her early on.
Well, I think if you are a super fan of the game, that reverence is there for sure. But I think if there's a level of fanhood that goes beyond that, like, Sandra is obviously an icon, but I think if you're talking deep Survivor nerdery, these people are going to be more equally surprised and excited by the fact that people are coming back that you were sure were never going to play again. Like, you knew Sandra will come back every single time she is asked to come back. But If I'm a Survivor super fan and I've won the game and I come back on for the all winter season and Yul Kwan is standing there and, like, Danny Boatwright is standing there, I'm going to be more excited about that, to be honest.
Okay. Let's touch on some ops that might be out there, some enemies for Sandra. Skelly, who does Sandra need to be on the lookout for this season?
Okay, I actually think that the biggest one, and probably a little underrated, is going to be Sarah. I know that Sandra said, basically, as soon as she walked on the beach with Sarah in Game Changers, she said something along the lines of, like, oh, how are you still in this game? And that basically, like, she's not willing to go ahead and play with that.
Yeah.
And
I forgot that they ended up on the same tribe together, that when they ended up Sandra ended up being voted out. Again, there were so many swaps and game changers. It's a season that I really have a hard time wrapping my head around. But yeah, I forgot that Sarah was there when Sandra ended up being voted out.
Yeah, and I think Sarah is the type who, like, will be willing to take shots at big players early, especially being the most recent winner of a full All-Star season. I think that she's going to know that, and I know that Sarah doesn't get as much credit as some people like to give her game, but I think that probably some of these winners are going to realize that, like, Sarah's dangerous, and so Sarah might come out swinging, and if I were Sandra, that's not someone that I would look to be working with.
Yeah, that's such an interesting parallel between Sandra and Sarah, because I almost feel like that in Game Changer, Sarah, like, played, like, the perfect Sandra Heroes versus Villains game, where she was sort of somebody that people weren't really worried about, and she was able to be very much under the radar. I kind of feel like it would be a mistake for Sarah to come out and then make a big name for herself early on in this game.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think the one thing that we're underestimating about Sarah's game is every single person who has played with Sarah has come out of there, like, being, feeling really personally wronged by Sarah. And I think even Sandra, to some degree, has probably seen that in action.
Yeah.
So I would say if I was targeting people, Sarah would be the first person I'd want out.
Yeah. Well, we'll save it for the Sarah preview. Yeah. But she's got a lot of connections to different people in this season. I think she's somebody to watch out for. All right. Other ops for Sandra. I mean, she has to have made a few enemies along the way to two wins. Jess, can you think of anybody else that might be gunning for Sandra?
Well, I think anybody that wants to overthrow the queen.
Yeah.
Like, anybody that is really attached to that idea that, well, she can't be a 3-time winner. And what if I'm the person that voted her out? I think we've talked about this already. There's going to be a lot of people that go in and see Sandra, the two-time winner, and are like, what if I'm the person that takes her down? That's going to be
your game. I'm going to feel.
Yeah. Even people that fangirl out about her and understand that she's an icon are going to be like, I could take down the icon. I could dethrone the queen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The people I see wanting to do that the most are, you know, even if they're friends with her, even if they love her, like you're saying, and would fangirl about her, I still think that, you know, some of these more new school, like Adam, Nick kind of people, I could see them just wanting to take her out just to do it and to have that on their resume. And then there's just people who, like, even if she's friends with, I don't know if I see her personality meshing a whole lot with, like, Denise. I don't know. I don't necessarily just see them together as much.
Okay. Let me ask a question from our Facebook group. Baby Andy wants to know, is Sandra the least likely player to win season 40?
No, Tony's the least likely.
She's poor Tony. Poor Tony. Okay. This is a question from Scott French, Jess, that we know that the edge of extinction is in play here in season 40. And as much as we're not excited about it, it's there. Does Sandra have much of a chance this season if coming back from extinction is going to be another challenge?
Well, Sandra quite famously is not great in challenges, and she's especially bad at the team challenges, but she's not exactly an individual immunity star either. Mm-hmm. But I do think it depends on what they give her. And if there is the right challenge, and if other people prove to be very bad at it, she could have a shot. But I'm going to say, if we're ranking people by who is the most likely to come back from Edge of Extinction, I got to put Sandra at the bottom of that list.
Yeah. Scala, can you come up with a scenario where Sandra comes back from the Edge of Extinction?
Who's willing to sit on the edge of extinction for the longest? Yes. Is about all I got.
5 years, no problem. Yeah.
She's never leaving.
Yeah. Mary, maybe I do think that Sandra could be somebody that we didn't really see it come up in season 38, but at its core, you know, the idea of the edge of extinction was supposed to be, oh, maybe people will like try to sabotage each other to get them to quit the edge of extinction. Sandra, I could definitely see being somebody who's up for that.
100%.
Yeah, that would be fun.
I'm going to make your life miserable here so you quit. Go raise the flag.
Yeah, you can just yell at people to go wash their ass and it'll be great. Mm-hmm.
Okay. This just makes me wish that Reem was still out there.
Yeah.
Dude, you know what? That Sandra, you're a pretty cool chick. You know what? I like having you out here. I think they'd get along.
Sandra could try to out-ream Reem.
Yeah, she can get loud too. Okay. Anything else on Sandra? Okay, we can move on.
We get to watch her at least.
We get to watch her. We get to have Sandra back. And look, if Sandra ends up going out early, I think that there'll be reasons why we're happy to have the edge of extinction at times this season. Okay.
Yeah. Right. One other thing that I did take from when going back to the interview that you did with her recently was she very much was said, like, I am not concerned about looking for idols and going about stuff like that. So where Sandra, I think, may need a couple of those idols to last through later rounds of gameplay, that is kind of a big sore point for why I don't think that even if she managed to get towards the end, she might be overlooking that part for herself.
Okay.
Yeah, and let's not forget that idols kind of made Sandra go to the end her second time out.
Yeah, she did have an idol at the end of the game, which she did find during, I believe it was an open idol hunt. Is that correct, Mary?
Yeah, well, there was that, and then there was also the one that was played on her. So she did have multiple ones. But yeah, the open idol hunt was where she found the one that she ended up using at the end.
Okay. All right. We've talked so much about Robin Sandra. Let's talk about Amber. Is she officially Amber Mariano, Mary?
Yeah, that's how she's written in all the press. She'll always be Amber.
I knew her when she was Amber Berkich.
Yeah.
way back when. Of course, by way of Survivor 2, the Australian Outback came out to Survivor All-Stars, beat Boston Rob by a vote of 4-3 in season 8 of Survivor. And now here she is back 32 seasons later. Jess, I still can't believe this.
I'm really excited about this. And, you know, I was not the world's biggest Rob and Amber stan. I think this is hard to remember if you didn't live through it.
Yeah.
But this was like the peak of my Survivor fandom. Yeah. And, you know, maybe some small part of me never quite forgave them for what they did to you.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, you know, Rob and Amber, of course, they go from season 8 of Survivor. But then before Rob shows back up on season 20 in Heroes versus Villains, just don't forget, Rob and Amber have two experiences on in your neck of the woods on The Amazing Race.
Yeah, it's true. And honestly, I was never a fan of them on Survivor. But I freaking loved them on Amazing Race.
Yeah.
They were so much fun. I think it was watching the two of them play as a team and kind of in a more straight manner that didn't rely so much on subterfuge, although Rob certainly brought that element in kind of revolutionary ways, which also made that kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But I felt like they were a little more goofy. They were a little looser with each other, more comfortable with each other. And it really made them much more rootable, I think, than they ever were on Survivor.
Yeah. Can you just stop that for a second for people who are Survivor only people that when you talk about Rob and Amber being transformative players on The Amazing Race, could you just talk a little bit about their run? I think specifically their first run.
Yeah, their second run did not go quite as well for them. They got
the first like three legs. It did.
Yeah, they win three legs and then they go out immediately. Mm-hmm. And that was hard to take. But their first time out, they would do some really kind of treacherous things that up until that point, you hadn't seen a lot of on Amazing Race. And there's one particular challenge that I think people go back to that's very legendary, where there was a roadblock, which is a task that one member of the team has to perform, where they would have to eat 4 pounds of meat. And Rob took the challenge and realized very quickly he has kind of a weak stomach. He couldn't handle it.
Mm-hmm. Not his forte.
They were in the front of the pack, and he looks at the fine print of the rules and realizes that if he quits the challenge, he's going to have to wait out a 4-hour penalty. He doesn't get booted from the race right off the bat. So he just has to wait out a 4-hour penalty. And if he's still in the running after that 4 hours, he can, you know, effectively reset at the beginning of the next leg. So all he has to do is make sure he's not in last place at the end of that 4 hours. So what he does is, as other teams start arriving, he convinces those teams to also quit the challenge. Mm-hmm. And also wait out that 4-hour penalty. And nobody had ever done that up to this point. And it was very entertaining to watch him bring Survivor strategy into the race. And they did stuff like they would be riding a bus and they would pay the bus driver to open up the back door, but not the front door. Mm-hmm. And it was just little silly stuff like that. It was very much fun to watch. And also, you saw a side of Amber on that season that she was just straight goofy. And she would she'd kind of be clowning. Like, there's one particular, they're in London. And they're doing this. Yes, the magnifying glass. And they're doing the Sherlock Holmes challenge. And she's got the magnifying glass. She's like holding it up to her eye. And it's, they should make a gif out of that if nobody has done it already. It's straight slavery.
Listeners, you heard Jess, okay? All right.
Yeah. Well, how soon we forget Rob and Amber against the odds?
Yes. But did you watch that show, Mary?
I tried to find it online one time I found like two episodes. They're really blurry. Yeah.
Who here has seen the wedding special?
Like five times?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that I did this because of where they got married, but I got married literally up the road from where they did.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Destination wedding.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's how you do it.
And I think it's underrated how good the two of them are as a team. I mean, particularly when you look at them on like Amazing Race and stuff, but Amber calms Rob down in a different way. And, you know, they've got more at stake now with their marriage and their four kids. So I don't know if they're ever going to have a chance to have that come into play in season 40, but I'm sure you saw some of that in season 8.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it just more of the two of them complaining about sleeping arrangements.
You're talking about that to me? Did I see that personally? I mean, that just my own personal experience with Robin. I got to experience their working together, but I did not get to really observe it much in terms of strategy talks. Basically, I did not get to talk much strategy at all with Amber. That I had a strategic relationship in my mind with Rob, and so I would talk with Rob, and it was okay. It's me and you and Amber and Tom, and that was fine. I didn't feel great about my position, but I felt okay about being that I was number four in this group, and that Alicia and Sue Hawk were the people that were on the outside. Turned out to not be the case, but I didn't feel like I had like a particularly, great relationship with, like I was ride or die with anybody there. I just thought I was okay. Well, I'm the, fourth person in this alliance and I'm very comfortable. And then I'll be in a good spot to flip to something else once we get to the merge. And they correctly were able to suss that out that, hey, this is somebody who's not really in our long term plans and we should get rid of him when the opportunity arises. So, but I do feel like that, again, I never got the breakdown of, from Rob or Amber specifically, but I feel like that in the episode, and Mary, correct me if I'm missing this, I do feel like that Amber is the person lobbying more, vote me out, where maybe Rob might be on the, maybe it's a little bit more of a 50-50 ball. I feel like that Amber is the one. She's played with Alicia. She's not really interested in getting rid of her or entertaining that, even though Rob and Alicia really butted heads in the first couple of days that we were out there. But I feel like that Alicia is the one, or Amber is the one that's more like, hey, vote out Rob, vote out, Rob C.
Yeah, that happens with you. It happens a couple times, actually, in All-Stars, where Rob kind of seems like he can go either way and throws it to Amber to make the decision, or at least to get more of her input, which is something people don't forget about. But yeah, that definitely happened with you and happens again when it's coming down to Big Tom versus Rupert in some extent. So I think that he definitely values her opinion. And I don't think that she... In especially in All Stars, she does not shy away from sharing her opinion. She's not trying to just ride coattails.
Okay, so now this is going to be Amber solo, at least in terms of what we're going to attempt to preview. I don't know what the tribes are. I know that you can, if you search hard enough, I think you can find that online. I would highly suspect that this is the case, that Rob and Amber would not be on the same starting tribe. So let's operate under that set of circumstances. Rob and Amber not together to start the game. And Mary, it's really only one vote in Survivor All-Stars that Amber is away from Boston Rob.
Yep. Only the one time when she gets swapped, which also is something to say, she played, her and Ethan are the two people who played the longest ago from now. But she did have an experience with something that is kind of a more, new school twist, I guess, of having that swap where she ends up on her own and having to deal with that. I don't think that she's, I don't know how much she, I know she still watches the show, but I don't know how much she prepped for this, but she did have to survive that one vote, which, is of course the infamous Lex, take care of her, I'll take care of you.
If you can.
But there is a lot that she does as well in terms of just being likable, campaigning for herself, and really campaigning against Jerry in that situation. So I think that she has that ability to kind of see who the other person who is on the bottom and come up with a reason to get rid of them.
Yeah. And it's
and I also, I think that moment was underratedly cold too, when you consider that Amber and Jerry were the tightest pair in Survivor Australia. And that Amber was quick to turn on her and throw her under the bus like that. At that point in time, given the history they had, and given how huge that season was in the lore, I think that's a really interesting and underrated moment as well.
Yeah, So very, very interesting that that's when Jerry ends up going out in Survivor All-Stars. Amber stays, and we know how the rest of the season ends up playing out. Okay, so Scally, let's talk about here's Amber away from Boston Rob. He's on another tribe. And now, how do we think she fares here in this game, which is, in a lot of ways, unrecognizable from the game that she played 32 seasons ago?
Yeah, I'm really curious because Amber is one where I can see her wanting to play a rather passive game, especially by the standards of how we are in, you know, 2020 in Survivor. I am a little bit worried, especially if she is on the other tribe from Rob, if she is eyed as a potential first boot just to weaken him, if she doesn't end up with people that she can work with. I really have seen things I liked from Amber in the past, but I am wondering how they're going to stack up in a modern season.
Okay, Jess, let's discuss this situation that Scally brings up of Amber's tribe goes to an early tribal council. If Rob is still in the game, do you see her as some sort of a sacrificial lamb in order to, we can't let Rob and Amber get back together. So if we have the shot at Amber, do we vote her out now?
I think it depends a lot on what Rob is doing at that point. And I think if he is out in front, if he is leading the tribe, if people are talking a lot about him, then, yeah, absolutely. I think that is a concern for Amber. But I think Rob could also play it a little more subdued. I think we'll get to this when we talk about Rob for 3 hours when we get done talking about Amber. But I do think it depends on what kind of profile Rob is striking right out of the gate. If he is a clear and obvious threat, then yes, people are going to target him. But I think it's, everybody here has won the game. Everybody here could be a threat. I think there's going to be a lot of big personalities, a lot of really potentially volatile situations, and a lot of people gunning for each other. So Rob is potentially the biggest target, but he has kept himself out of the spotlight when he needs to. And I think if we get to a point where it's the first tribal council and it's Amber's tribe up, there could be a bigger threat within Amber's group.
Mm-hmm.
And she's smart enough that she can find that person and she can deflect onto that person.
Yeah, Mary, I think this is kind of a fascinating situation. And I kind of hope that we get this where Amber's tribe goes to tribal council while Rob is still in the game early on. And there is this discussion that ends up being had, because I wonder how much will it mirror that discussion that Lex and Kathy and Sheehan had back at the old Shapara tribe. And they talked about, like, well, if we take out Amber, there's going to be hell to pay. We are going to feel Rob's wrath of the Godfather if we end up being the person to take out Amber. Do you think that people will be afraid to vote her out if he's still in the game?
Yeah, that's the two conversations I'm thinking of are that one and the one that was had about should we vote out Rachel, and because, you know, Tyson would get mad. So we're definitely going to see a lot of this kind of blood versus water opinion here. I think that it's going to depend how Rob's doing. If Rob's got the numbers and people don't want to make him upset because he has the ability, you know, and at what point in the game is this the first vote? Is this the third vote? And they might swap soon and are going to have to immediately deal with those repercussions with Rob. That's tricky. I think that in a more new version of the game where they are more likely to have swaps or to have idols or advantages or disadvantages that you could send cross tribe, I think there is an actual higher level of risk that, you know, something could come back to bite them if Rob does have the ability to do something about it. But I'm also not sure. I bet that Rob and Amber had a discussion before the game saying, what do we do if one of us goes home? Is that actually a better thing for our game? And I know a lot of people have talked about, you know, Rob leaving and then taking the pressure off Amber where she can go by. I kind of think it works both ways, but there are so many people here who are close friends that, yes, they're married, but is that is that really going to matter? I think it's a lot more of like a just optics kind of thing than how much they're actually going to be. You know, people have ride or dies all the time. Does it really matter that they're married? Yes, it does, but I'm just trying to kid myself.
Yeah, Jess, I really do feel like just to go back to what Mary brought up about the blood versus water of it all, of if Boston Rob does go out of the game, I do feel like it tremendously helps Amber's chances. But assuming that Boston Rob does not say, they don't have like some sort of a deal of, hey, if one of us gets voted out, okay, you go home if you can, and go, you know, take care of the kids. But with the idea of the edge of extinction, I wonder though how much that changes the equation, where I kind of felt like, well, if Boston Rob is the first person out, Amber might win the season. But now if Boston Rob's on the edge of extinction, I feel like that Amber might still be likely to join him there.
I think that's very likely. And I think, but I think Mary makes a good point about the fire tokens. And we haven't really talked a lot about this twist, and I don't know how much we want to, but the idea that you can get sent to the edge of extinction and then have the ability to do like Hunger Games tribute prizes to people that are still in the game. Yeah. I think there is a very high chance that one of them goes to Edge of Extinction and just camps out on Edge of Extinction the whole time, just sending little sponsor gifts to their tribute that's still in the arena.
Yeah. And there was an all winners version of Hunger Games.
Oh yeah, this is definitely Survivor Quarter Quill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also want to make the observation that, you know, how much we talk about Sierra Easton as being the person who voted out her mom. If Rob votes for Amber, or Amber votes for Rob, I think that would be the most epic thing we'd ever talk about for the rest of Survivor, as long as it goes. So I kind of want to see that happen.
Yeah,
exactly, the most thing that their kids will talk about.
So totally.
Scally, I know that this idea is out there. We had a question from Tommy Guam. Who's more likely to vote the other out, Rob or Amber? Which is the more likely scenario to happen?
I gotta feel like it's Amber voting out Rob. Yeah. I just don't see where we get to a point for Rob where it's advantageous to go along with a plan to get Amber out.
Right. I could see that, where, you know, similar to the Sierra Easton thing where everybody's voting out Rob and Amber ends up, you know, Rob tells her like, hey, you vote for me tonight too. And then she does it like it's going to change anything. But I could see, again, Rob and Amber, I think, are, as people who have been on many, many reality TV shows, are savvy enough to know that this would be a good TV moment to go ahead and do it also. So I think that there's a non-zero chance that that happens in this season.
And if they know that, you know, Edge of Extinction is a thing, I think that weighs into their choice of who should leave. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Let's keep going with Amber in terms of her long layoff in the game. Just do we expect Amber to come out and be, you know, somebody who is more of a keen observer of the game and is going to be playing more in the modern style? Or do you think that we would expect a more old school game from Amber?
Well, I would say if we didn't have the piece of information that she's married to someone who's won relatively recently and who's been very involved in the community and in the game, I would say she'd probably be taking a more traditional approach. But knowing that she lives with the man who literally wrote the book on Survivor rules, I have to think that she has been an acolyte at his feet. And you have to think she proofread a couple of those drafts while he was writing the thing.
To be fair, the Boston Rob rulebook does not actually contain that much Survivor strategy. It's more the strategies for life, Jess. I believe that is the Mary. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you know, rule number 12, always make your own sauce. Don't buy it from a can.
This is the most disappointing thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, this is actually not that much Survivor strategy.
Oh my God, I guess I'm glad I didn't buy it.
Boston Rob rule book.
Yeah, now you take that back.
Scally, all right, let's talk about friendly faces for Amber. Who do you see as people that would be likely allies for Amber?
Well, I think first you have to look at most of Rob's allies, because while Amber, I think, probably does have a better relationship with more people that we think of off the top of our heads, I don't think it's been as public, so it's a little harder to forecast, as well as obviously we know Amber and Ethan did date at one point in the past. I think that that's probably still a pretty friendly relationship. But
is that a plus or a minus, though?
I don't know as well as some other people here may know, but I don't see that having ended so badly.
I think that Ethan and Amber would be absolutely fine to work together. I'm sure that they have seen each other, and Rob and Ethan have seen each other at, you know, a million Survivor functions over the years. And I'm sure that Ethan is, you know, one of the nicest guys. I think that would be a friendly face for sure in the crowd.
And she is by far not the only ex-survivor that he dated.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So yeah, Ethan, that's a good one. Tell me if this is like, I feel like that we can talk about this, that so Rob and Amber are definitely not on the same tribe, and Rob and Sandra are definitely not on the same tribe. So Jess, then thus Amber and Sandra must be on the same starting tribe, right?
Right. Well, and this goes back to Amber being in with Rob's old allies. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Rob and Sandra have played a real game together. They've played season 39 together for certain values of playing. You have to think that they will be inclined to work together. And yeah. I think that's part of that whole like villains tribe group, because if you look at the Survivor villains tribe, that was such a stacked tribe. That
greatest
is crazy.
Tribe in the history of the show.
I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think they have a ready made ally in each other. But the question is, will that be enough? Who else do they pull in? I think it depends a lot on the luck of the draw.
OK, Mary, who else could Amber potentially get in this coalition?
I mean, you got Tyson. Mm-hmm. So there's that. You got Ethan, Sandra. Yeah, I think I see there being a bit of a split between old school and new school.
I agree.
So I don't know if Amber actually has a super strong relationship with someone like Yul or Danny, but I think that they could easily lean together.
I mean, I suspect that Amber has probably never met Yul or Danny in her life.
No, but if you're Danny or Yul and you're looking at, you know, who am I going to team up with? Am I going to be from people who are also from early seasons or not? I think that's possible. I think Amber and Sophie actually would probably be a pretty good
Amber and Sophie. I mean, yeah. I think that's another one that I feel like that I can't imagine where their paths would cross.
I think it's more about temperament was what I was going off of. Yeah. I'm just trying to look at who I think could stand each other and doesn't immediately clash, because there are a lot of clashing personalities.
Well, I think Amber is incredibly easy to get along with. I can't imagine anybody targeting her. And, you know, if it was announced that she and Boston Rob had gotten divorced 6 months before the season started, I think she'd be a shoo-in to be the winner of the season. I feel like that other than her, you know, a relationship with Rob, just I see no reason to target her.
What if they announced that they were getting divorced at the reunion?
Oh, that's good. You reversed Jeremy Collins it.
Yeah, so Jeff comes out like, all right. Actually, no, it wouldn't have worked. I was going to say at the Island of the Idols or reunion, Rob should have announced that
him and Amber got divorced. What if they got divorced like just for the purposes of the show?
Yes. But that would have been, you know, they would have had to have done it, you know, a year ago.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, some of this we just have to figure out how much has changed, because like Amber in her seasons, no slouch at challenges. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how much of that you can factor 20 something years later, but you never know. There's also Kim. I feel like there's because Amber, while by herself, is not a threat since she's attached to Rob. I'm just looking at these other like threat kind of people who are going to be teaming up together. Mm. Really, I don't know who in this cast is like anti Amber.
No, I don't think she has any ops other than the people that might be anti Boston Rob. So we'll see. We'll see. Okay. Let's ask some questions. Will A has a question. Was Sheehan right when she said Amber was really the one running the game in All-Stars? Mary, I know you recently watched the All-Stars at that on good authority. Was Sheehan right when she said that Amber was running the game?
She was right that Amber was not doing nothing.
Mm-hmm.
She was not right that Amber was solely running the game or somehow running it more than Rob was.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that whole, like, you beat the winner of in a basketball game and then that team ends up winning the state tournament. So did you really win? Not really. Like, Amber beat Rob, but that doesn't mean she beat all the people Rob beat in mm-hmm. that game.
Yeah,
I think I have the most cynical take on why Sheehan said that when she said that.
Why'd she say it?
I think Sheehan dropped that in on the off chance that Amber wins the whole thing. She can be seen as prophetic. It will look great and they will definitely leave it in.
Yeah. Oh, interesting. So she was thinking about the TV show. Yeah. I wonder if maybe she was more that like, hey, I'm gonna be friends with Amber and then we'll party. And then this will be my good friend that'll end up getting $1 million. Maybe
she'll give me a car.
Who's ever voted for someone on that kind of basis?
I don't know.
On the ability to party with them more.
It's a good metric, I think. When in doubt.
You know, through my rewatch of All Stars, my real goal was to see how much was Amber actually doing versus like how much was it just Rob. And while the optics of the thing were like the number of times that people didn't even say we need to get Shapira out, but we need to get Rob out or Rob's tribe or Rob. So I think it definitely looked like Rob was winning, but you know, she wasn't doing nothing. She was in on the conversations. She was smart to make that alliance. And she was also very smart to actively put him in front of her, which is, I think, something else that people forget that was a choice that she made to not be that number one person out there. Not that she could have been. But I think that Sheehan has a point that Amber is not the same as some of these other first place people who have surprisingly won against a big target.
Okay. The question from Ivan, who wants to know, is there a legitimate strategic scenario other than trying to flush an idol from Rob or use Rob as a shield where it makes sense to target Amber first if given the opportunity? Brian, is it possible that she could be, hey, if we don't vote her out, then when is she getting voted out?
I feel like that can only really come into play maybe, let's say, right before the merge or early merge, if they end up where, let's say, you're someone like a Tyson, a Jeremy, a Ben, where you want Rob in because you're close with him, but he's also a bigger target than you that the opposing alliance is going to come after before you. If you're okay with losing Amber for whatever reason, then I guess, but I think that's going to be a small number of scenarios that we see that outcome.
Okay. All right. Is there anything else we need to say about Amber before we move on to talking about the return of Boston Rob?
I think it's worth noting that she has not aged a day since season 8, and B, her children just look like little clones of her. They do not look like Rob at all.
Yeah. I have two quick things. Amber's one of the bigger questions for me in that I really don't think that, I mean, maybe they just sweeten the pot to a great extent, but I don't think that Amber and Rob both sign up to come out here without Amber really brushing up on recent seasons, recent strategy and stuff like that. So I do have some question of if the Amber we see play is going to be completely different from what we're expecting. But also one thought that I had on Amber coming in was, especially with the announcement of Edge of Extinction, as I think it probably hurts her the most of any player in that. Yeah. Even if Rob goes home and you think that, because Amber's not necessarily, at least from what we've seen earlier, is going to be driving an alliance to people that she can beat towards the end. And now with the threat of Rob potentially coming back in at the final six, final five, I would be terrified to leave Amber in there.
Yeah,
that also. Yeah. So knowing that he might come back in, I would be so scared to let it get to the point where, oh, now both of them are back in the game at final six.
Yep. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about that too much until today, but I do think that the Edge of Extinction really does hurt Amber. And so I was just thinking about making her winner pick. But I don't know. I don't know. All right. Let's talk about the other half of Romber. I haven't said that in about 15 years. And let's talk about Boston Rob, the return of Boston Rob. Are we officially counting this as the fifth or sixth trip to Survivor, Jess?
I think this technically counts as fifth, because last season he did not enter the game, contrary to what everybody was hoping or fearing would happen.
Yeah.
He was out there. He pretended to build a shelter with no help. And
how dare you?
I mean, I like his chances much better if he gets to keep that shelter. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Like, what if the giant heads are still there?
Yeah, well, but nobody look. Nobody look. All right, Mary. All right. You are unapologetically the Boston Rob super fan on the panel. We've talked about this before, but just for anybody who's jumping in tonight, can you explain how Boston Rob first became your favorite Survivor?
Well, I don't remember what I've said in the past, but he mostly became my favorite Survivor because for a while I only owned Survivor All-Stars on DVD. And so I just mostly rewatched that over and over again.
Yes.
But also I think it's just, he has that ability to talk to the audience in his confessionals in a way that no one else does. He's unapologetically going to play the game and manipulate things in a Russell Hansey like way, but in a way that comes off much more fun, even when he's just being the godfather, that I really appreciate. If you've listened to any podcast with him, you know that he's incredibly good at reading people and always thinking 10 steps ahead, not just about how he perceives them, but how they perceive him, how they're perceiving the way that he's perceiving them. And so his mind works in that way, which is great. And also just like watching him run around, try and chase chickens that are flying away in season four is just fun. Who doesn't love a rapscallion, you know?
Yeah. And to speak to your point, which I feel like that we, you know, we talk a lot about his game and his strategy. I think that the connection that he has with the audience is an interesting one. And I think that he's maybe the first person on Survivor to really talk to the people at home about, well, you know, what he's going to do. You know, he you know, you feel like, you know, he's your friend and he's like letting you in on stuff that he's going to do or that might happen. And I feel like that very few survivors over the history of the show have really ever done that in the way that he did. And I think that's one of the reasons why so many people have a real connection with him as a TV character. But let's talk about Rob's return here. Scally, can this go well?
I think it might go better than you would think looking on paper. And that is due large in part to Rob's relations with the other winners.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, diving right into it, it's just where people were talking about like, oh, voting off Amber, equating it to like, oh, voting, being worried about voting off Rachel. And is Tyson going to be mad? I think Tyson voting off his friends of 10 years wife is going to be a lot different in that matter. So I just really, there's so many relationships lined up here for him that I can really see him floating past the beginning where he maybe shouldn't be allowed to get past and then being set up in a position where, oh no, we can't stop him.
Okay. Mary, can you give us the Red Sox colored glasses view of Boston Rob's return here on season 40?
The perfect scenario for him is if he's able to start the game very similarly to how he did Heroes versus Villains, play the hero, play the good guy, be the leader without trying to control a group. Mm-hmm. You know, build everybody a shelter and then hopefully have some people on his tribe who are running amok. And then you have the mindset of we need to stop these these new young people who are going to just find the idols. And
I like this. Boston Rob is like the leader of a ragtag bunch of idiots, and that he ends up being the likable hero who ends up getting voted out. And then they bring him back for another season, because then he builds up so much goodwill.
Exactly. That's what's going to happen. Yes. He's going to be the first 7-time player in the game.
Just wait. He's going to heroes versus villains it again. So I actually disagree, because I think I have the winning scenario for Boston Rob here, Mary.
You're going to say he gets voted out, goes to Edge of Extinction, and comes back at fifth place?
He's going to Underwood this thing. Sure. He's going to Underwood this thing, Jess. Fine.
Yeah, he's definitely going to Underwood it.
That's the likely scenario. That's not my happy scenario. To watch him be fun. I don't want to watch Rob sit on an island all season.
Are you saying that Rob on Edge of Extinction would not be epically fun?
I also, while I like Rob, I was very, very, very disappointed that him and Sandra came back for this season. I didn't want to see them not play the game. And while it was fun and everything like that, I want to see them in a pure fashion. So I don't want to just get content. I want to see him be able to play the game again. And so if I'm just sitting there, you know, because you know they're going to just give a billion confessionals to him on Edge of Extinction, and you got like 15 minutes there, and now we're losing the game again. And oh my gosh, it's season 38 all over again. I don't need that. I don't care if there's different people. I don't want someone to Chris Underwood it. But it's probably going to happen.
Yeah. A Boston Rob Edge of Extinction trip, and then win, though, Mary. You would celebrate that, right?
I mean, yeah, I'll pull my little bee out. I'll do it, but it's not the same.
It's not how you want to win.
No. I want to see everybody's fan fiction version, where you've got like Rob and Kim and Sandra and Tyson and Jeremy all like being awesome and going to the end with Parvati and, you know, the whole cast. Everybody makes it to the 20. End. It's great.
Survivor 40. Everyone's a winner.
Okay. Just, do you have any more plausible scenarios that season 40 might play out for Rob?
I think a plausible scenario is that Rob trades heavily on relationships that he has made outside of the game, which is how he got as far as he did in All Stars. I think people are a lot more savvy than they were. I think Rob's biggest problem is that he's not going to have any idiots to kick around in this season like he has in certain past seasons. But I think his smart move now is to not underestimate anybody and to be okay with having people on his level in his alliance, which I think he almost never is. So I think he's got to trade on those relationships outside the game and really try hard not to do what he did to Lex.
Yeah. And it's very interesting, you know, to go back to that period in time that people had never played a season of reality TV with other people that they knew from outside of the game. And, you know, Rob and Lex had a friendship. And I did the math on this recently. And, you know, Rob and Lex had been friends for a good, you know, 6 months coming into Survivor All-Stars. So
months.
I mean, it seemed like, wow, they were really good friends. But this would be like, it would be the equivalent of, you know, hey, you know, somebody from season 38 is friends with somebody from season 39. So they have an unbreakable bond.
I feel like if me and Scally played, you know?
Yeah. Okay.
But with Rob, the other thing is, it's not just that he doesn't have like little idiots. He doesn't have like a goofball person. You know, he doesn't have like a Big Tom or like a Coach or a Philip. He doesn't have someone. He doesn't have somebody who can be like a fun sidekick.
Tony is everybody's sidekick.
Are they going to start Tony and Rob on the same tribe? I don't know.
I don't know.
We can hope.
That could be that person. That guy. I feel like everybody that's thinking about voting out Tony, they could all benefit from keeping Tony around.
One world, one tribe for the first vote.
Yeah, I want to
just get Tony out.
I want to put that out there. All right. Let's talk a little bit more about stands and ops for Boston Rob. Of course, we know Amber is a biggest ally. Sandra, somebody Rob could work with. Jess, who are the other friendly faces that are out there for Rob?
I mean, we've got Tyson.
Yes.
I think I think that's going to be a key ally for him. And then anybody that's been in those poker playing circles, I think we have to keep an eye on.
Okay,
and,
name names. Who else you got in the poker playing circles?
Well, I've never been to Run It Up Reno, so I really couldn't speak to that as much. Mm-hmm. But I know that he's not the only person. I believe Adam Klein has been to Run It Up Reno in the past. Mm-hmm. And I think there's some reverence there. Like, I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say about Adam on the roundtable that happens there, because yeah. I think he's going to be an interesting factor. I think he's the closest we get to the fan person that comes out and like is really starstruck by that.
Mm-hmm. I think Rob loves that.
Yeah, I think we got Parvati out there. I think she was on the opposite side for a while in that whole power mm-hmm. balance, but they have played a season together. And I think yeah. it's just like you roll up and there are familiar faces, and the person you've known the longest, even if you didn't necessarily play together the last time, as long as you don't have actively bad blood, you could gravitate toward that person.
Yeah. Mary, who else do you think are the pro Rob people? Because I feel like we're throwing out a lot of names.
Yeah. I think, did we already mention Kim? I don't know.
Not really. That I think that Kim would probably be generally pro Rob.
Yeah, I think with Kim also, there's that kind of whole like Kim and Rob being the names you generally hear about being the best, some of the best players or best winners mm-hmm. that I kind of feel like would not want to immediately get each other out for that reason. Mm-hmm. Keep the
good shield.
Or is he going to look at Kim and think she's going to be gunning for me mm-hmm. as the other greatest of all time?
Well, anything's possible, you know. I love, my favorite thing to see is the whole like, oh, they would never expect us to be together because they think we hate each other. They think that we'd want us out. We'll surprise them all by being together. That's my favorite thing to see. So I don't know if we're going to get any of that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that are kind of in this gray area, like Ethan, where they definitely know each other and are probably friendly, mm-hmm. but also Rob didn't have a hand in voting Ethan out in All-Stars, but they, you know, Ethan had to. Yeah, I don't know.
I think they would work together.
I
really think for these people, especially like Ethan and for Rob, too, it's like, hey, I've known you for 10 years, 15 years. Unless I actively hate your guts, I'm not coming for you instead of this person that I've never met before, that I'm going to work with the devils I know and the people that I've spent time with in real life, at least in the beginning of the game, over mm-hmm. the people that are complete random strangers.
Yeah, I definitely think that you can at least expect, you know, the classic survivors in obviously Robin, Amber, Sandra and Ethan to all be eyeing each other as potential allies. Mm-hmm. I think more people that he played with in that poker circuit. I remember it was maybe the Vegas event mm-hmm. where it was like Rob and Jeremy and Adam and I think Ben were rooming together. And immediately I was like, well, that's an interesting grouping that mm-hmm. I don't know why would be working to, you know, rooming together if not.
It's a long con.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely think there are even some newer players that Rob has been associating with in the last couple of years. So because people even said like, oh, well, Rob and Sandra, I mean, people were going to notice that they were missing from all the, you know, discussions before 40, whether or not it was leaked officially. And people were like, oh, well, they missed out on talk. Like they've been doing this for 20 years now where they've mm-hmm. been talking about potentially coming back. So I think he's well set up with probably the most relationships on the cast, at least most tight relationships.
Is there any chance of Rob being like grandpappy Rob who just like takes everybody in, is like, oh, young Adam, oh, young Nick Wilson, hey, come and join Wilson. My yeah. Is there any chance of that, or is everyone just going to see through that instantly?
I mean, I think he might try it. I just felt like coming into this tonight, I was like, oh, well, Rob will probably be, you know, first or second person off. But I do feel like that are we deluding ourselves, Jess? Or have we made a case that maybe he's going to be around for a little bit?
I think he sticks around for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I think he's never been the first one off of yeah. any of the seasons he's played. Like even the ones where he doesn't do well, he just goes shy of the merge.
Yeah.
And that's that's not a deep run, but it's not a shallow one either.
He's also, I'm sorry.
No, he's also what?
He's also a you know, a great leader and a player in the challenges. Also, mm-hmm. I think that this is kind of a thing. I'm not sure if it is in Heroes versus Villains or a more in Redemption Island, Mary, but that Rob is also great at the puzzles.
Yeah, Heroes versus Villains couldn't do that puzzle.
Yeah,
in season
yeah.
eight.
Yeah, that's the one time that couldn't put that thing together.
You know, 12
put
seasons
a
later.
Story shelter together like nothing, but that cube. Yeah. Very tricky.
Yeah, he's good with the puzzles, good with the team challenges especially, but you know, there's also like the literally carrying his family on his back.
Yeah. So, we'll see. All right. Let's get to some actually did we cover just do we have any Boston Rob ops that are out here?
I think, well, We're sitting here saying that everybody's going to be gunning for him. So who's going to be actively gunning for him? I think we should talk about that.
It's whoever he decides to target first. That's who's going to.
So are they going to reactively gun for him or?
Yeah, probably. I mean,
it's tricky because I kind of feel like the people that would benefit most from getting Rob out of the game are the people that would probably also be the I don't want to be the first boot. So let's vote out Rob. But it's also those are the same people that probably need him to stay in the game the most to hide behind. So, yeah, you know, I mean, I do think the game's at an interesting place in that way.
Yeah, it's really hard to tell. I think I don't see him getting along with Tony. I mean, Tony is the one he's the one crazy person that's comes the closest to the Philip Shepherd mold. But I also think Tony is too volatile to accept guidance from an alpha like Rob.
I think that he also comes too close to fitting in that Russell Hantz mold. And I think that Rob is probably pretty scarred from that as well.
Yeah. And I think we have so many people that played a quieter game in this group that it's hard to see them coming out with strong feelings like being ops to anybody. So I think it's hard to make that call as well.
The people here, though, there's a lot of people that we haven't seen Rob play with a person like Danny or like Michelle, someone who's smart and purposely plays kind of under the radar. I don't know if Rob has a whole lot of experience with those type of players.
Yes, Amber.
Okay. Right, with one glaring exception. I wonder if he would be more inclined to go after some people like them if they're not super gung-ho about working with him, just because that's kind of the devil he doesn't know.
It's a good question. I think he will gravitate toward the people that he has the strongest pregame relationships with. And I think he will target people that are question marks to him.
Mm-hmm. This is a question from William McQuaid, who says, Rob, at the end of the Evolution Strategy, Chapter 22, you mentioned that you thought Rob was probably done with Survivor since he had proven all that he had to prove and seemed to get little to no enjoyment out of playing on Redemption Island. He did win. What do you think changed so that he wants to come back? Mary, why do you think that Rob did come back for this season?
He's probably bored. He's got like four kids.
I mean, I feel like that I've heard him say, you know, hey, maybe next time Amber goes back, and not necessarily that he wanted to come back. I just think that it's unusual. Like, I feel like he would think he would not have a great shot to win. Why come back for this?
Yeah, and that's kind of what I was saying about the like grandfather Rob thing is. He seemed to get some enjoyment from Islands of the Idols of being more of a figurehead than an actual player, being able to give advice and kind of hang back. And that's a different side to the same leadership coin that we've seen him use. Mm-hmm. And so if he was able to negotiate I come back if Amber does, sure, I'll be your figurehead. And that could be his reasoning. I think that was a good way to get her on the show. So I don't really, I definitely don't see him trying to win this season. Okay. Even if he's just trying to hang out to see if Amber can get far.
I really love the idea of two people coming out to Survivor and then both playing so that one of them wins.
Especially for $2 million.
Yeah.
I think that's a lot of fun as a concept, and we've seen it to varying degrees. Yeah. I mean, arguably you could say that was part of Rob's strategy in the first All-Stars. Mm-hmm. I think we've seen variations of that, but we've never seen someone come in and straight not care whether they win or lose and have all their chips in someone else's basket.
You know where we have seen this? Hunger Games.
Yeah, I was thinking, I didn't want to say, are we all like pushing for PETA to win this time?
Okay.
If PETA's Amber, yeah.
I want to invite people who are watching us live in the YouTube comments to bring their questions in. We can go ahead and take them live from the comments. Also, hashtag RHAP, and we'll take some more of your questions. This is a question from Liv, who says, how does Sandra's two-time title hold up against this next two-time winner, considering that this season the title is a given? If Sandra is not the winner, would they be on equal footing with Sandra, Jess?
This goes back to that whole thing about if you beat a team and then that team goes on to win, have you really beaten that team? I don't think that's necessarily accurate, but I do think it sets it up quite nicely. If Sandra wants to come back and play yet again, mm-hmm. you could have a season of two mentors like Sandra and the other two-time winner, mm-hmm. either in another edge of it, another Island of the Idols type scenario, or in a situation where they're like the Coach and Ozzy of their groups.
Okay. So basically we're going to bring back the Redemption Island South Pacific format.
Sure. I mean, I hated that format and I felt like those are some of the weaker moments, but if Sandra is one of those people, maybe I'm back on board.
Yeah. Okay. This is a question from Tater Salad. How will the fire tokens affect the game? Scally, have we had any real info about this yet?
Well, one thing I thought I heard was that you'd have the ability to will tokens if you were voted out of the game. That might have been something that I read early on and might not actually be the case. But I do think that in terms of fire tokens, I think that it is an advantage for Rob in that he's used to playing a game like poker where mm-hmm. it's about, you know, a currency management and ultimately playing, like going all in and saving them rather than wasting and yada, yada. So I do think that ultimately this is a positive in the Rob column.
Mary, I think the fire tokens are such a bad idea here for this season that we have so much going on. We have 20 people. We have 42 minutes. Why are we wasting time with fire tokens?
Well, I already had the org community come at me for being upset about the fire tokens.
Oh, org community likes fire tokens?
Apparently, it's a big thing in org community. Wasn't in any of the orgs I played, but okay. Apparently it's a big thing.
Okay.
But I think the only way that I would see it being really great is if it could somehow be on Edge of Extinction where there's another way to get back in the game as opposed to just winning a challenge. I think that sets a little bit more of an even playing field. Which is okay.
First person to get this 5 fire tokens gets back in the game.
Well, sure. Like if the fire tokens doesn't really factor into the like in-game part, mm-hmm. but just it's a little side game, that would be okay. If one of the fire tokens existed just for Rob and Amber to be that like Rupert Laura twist where they can swap places, that'd be pretty cool.
I'll take a one-way ticket back to the island. That'll be 19 fire tokens, sir. Okay. Let me come back. Jess, where do you stand on the fire tokens?
I have to see them in action. I think we've heard so many conflicting stories about how the fire tokens work. Like, do you get them on Extinction and put them in the game? Do you earn them on the island? Are you given them arbitrarily? We've heard all of these different conflicting stories. And I know that someone's going to come at me and be like, well, somebody posted in a spoiler thing, but we don't have official word until we see them explained on the air. And it's really hard to tell how that's going to affect the game until we see what they actually do and what they're capable of.
I heard they add a new layer of duplicity to the game.
That I have heard that as well.
Yeah. Jess, do you think I could get some RHAP fire tokens printed? How would I go about that?
I'm hoping that's like one of the next patron incentives. Yeah,
I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to.
You just got to wait until we see what they look like.
Yeah.
And then we'll just copy it like we did the buffs.
Yeah, I'm going to start researching that. Okay. All right. Let's see. Let's look for some more questions from the chat. I saw one. This one. Let's go to this one from Joseph. If the Marianos have agency early on, who are they targeting? Mary, as the Mariano expert, who would they like to see out of the game?
Well, if Tony's still around, probably him. If he's
Why would they hate Tony?
It's nice just guy. That unpredictability. Yeah. Otherwise, it would probably be whoever's coming out of the gate immediately finding idols and doing that kind of thing. But more likely, it's going to be someone, one of these new people that they just don't know and don't have a good read on. Always a safe bet to get. I think if you're someone like Robin Amber, you need to keep big names around and anyone you know. And so anyone you don't know and don't think you have a chance of working with, go ahead and get them out immediately.
Okay. Kelly Lynch has a question. Going into the all winter season, who's the biggest threat? Is it the person who played the most times or the person who played the most recently? Scally, what do you think is going to be more top of mind for people?
I definitely think played the most times that we've discussed on All-Star seasons. It's even less than who did well and more who got a lot of screen time. And so when you're playing with a lot of people who have played over multiple seasons and they're larger names in the franchise, I definitely think that they are going to have an immediate target on their back.
Yeah, Jess, I kind of agree with that. I feel like that some of the players that played most recently, I feel like who's coming for Nick? Like who's coming for Wendell?
That's a very good question. I think they're a lot less iconic for sure. Mm-hmm. And I think they also have the advantage of it's been fresher in their minds and they also have been able to play with all of the weird twists. And so they're accustomed to that. Whereas somebody like, you know, Ethan, for example, who's played in season 3, where the biggest thing that happened was they swapped tribes one time. Like what's that going to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mary, you have any thought on this?
Yeah, I think that I don't see anyone coming after them. I mean, unless it's just a challenge threat scenario.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Other than the three people that we talked about tonight, can you you want to give any quick takes about anybody else that we are not specifically talking about?
Ooh. I love Sophie.
Yeah.
Big Sam.
Okay.
That's what Sophie. Okay. I know I'm a big Boston Rob fan. Sophie is my all time favorite Survivor player ever. So I want whatever's best for her to happen.
Yeah. Why are you so connected to Sophie?
I think that she's really, really underrated as like a lot of the same things people say about Rob. She's really, really, really good at reading people. And she's one of the in a game where you sometimes watch casts and just wonder, like, how are these people real people? Mm-hmm. Why do they have these thoughts? Why do they open their mouths? Why do they say these things? Sophie is very, I think, relatable as like a just kind of down to earth, sane person. And maybe that's what I connect with her about. Or it's the glasses. I don't know.
I love Sophie too. Jess, anybody else that's on this cast that you're really excited about?
I'm really intrigued by some of the players that we thought would never come back. And I think I've been pretty vocal about that already.
Danny and Yule were your top two.
Yeah, Danny and Yule are definitely people I want to see what they've been doing. Like, I didn't even think they were watching the show anymore. Mm-hmm. Are they going to come back completely clueless? Or maybe they're both highly intelligent people who played amazing games. So how's that going to figure in? I think they're kind of wild cards, I think, in all of this. I'm also really excited to see Denise, who I think played a really underrated game, mm-hmm. and who might have the strongest like social IQ of anybody that's coming in. So I think there's not anybody that I'm categorically unpsyched to watch. There are people I'd be less happy if they won, but I think everybody coming in has something to bring to the table.
Scally, who's your person that we didn't talk about tonight?
Let me say two real quick and then my one, but I would say I'm also super excited about Sophie in terms of I think she's underestimated. I think she's probably the most different as a person than she was in her first season out of anyone here. Adam, I think, has a lot, wants to prove really hard that he did not just win by, you know, as a fluke and wants to play an aggressive game. But I am probably the most excited for Natalie Anderson. I think she's the perfect mix of not a huge threat in name, but is a huge threat in willing to, you know, take charge and really cut throats. Loves, you know, she loves Tony. She's proven already that she is willing to play like a Tony in certain rounds. So that's definitely someone that I am very, very excited to see.
Scott, how do you think Natalie Anderson was going to get along with Boston Rob?
I can see the thing with Natalie is I know a lot of people say, oh, like, aren't you worried about Natalie's, let's say personality. Mm-hmm. And I will say the two people that we've really seen her fight with on Survivor are John Rocker, which, I mean, come on. And then her sister. So your relationship with yeah. your sibling is completely different from anyone else. So I feel like, yeah, it's in Natalie that it could blow up, but I think she'll be able to handle it a lot better than most people still give her credit for.
Yeah, just as long as they don't make her have to drive a stick shift.
Yeah, just so we have three Amazing Race alumni in this season. Am I missing anybody?
We got Twinny. We got Ethan. We got
Ethan. I forgot. Oh, Rob Amber. Four Amazing Race alumni in one season.
Yeah, but, I mean, Ethan probably doesn't brag about it.
No, he does not. Is this the most amazing racist or raciest? Amazing raciest season of Survivor ever.
I think it's the most amazing race-tastic season ever.
Race-tastic. Very good. Very good. Okay. All right. Oh, boy. All right. Scott St. Pierre has another question up for me. Paul on Twitter, Paul Wright says, could Sandra possibly look to target the single season players, Michelle, Ben Adams, make sure she doesn't get replaced as the only player to go 2-0? There are 11 such players versus 9 multi-season players. Could that factor in, Mary?
I mean, that's a very specific stat to be trying to prevent. I don't know. I think it's a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how much that's going to factor in. It's an interesting thing to think about, and I like to look at these kind of stats, but I don't think that it's going to matter so much game-wise.
If there's any lever she could pull, she will, but I don't know if that's what she's going in working on. I think she's very worried about making it through three more days, as she once talked about once upon a time. Okay. All right. Anything else we want to say tonight before we log off with our first season 40 preview of the preseason?
Yeah, I think we kind of mentioned it with the fire tokens thing, but my biggest fear for this season is that it becomes too much about idols and advantages and fire tokens and Extinction Island when you have such an amazing cast, most of which have won their seasons by their strategic or social manipulations. Mm-hmm. I just want to see that happen. And I just want to see these people be able to play off each other. Like, even people are saying, oh, I don't want a pagonging. If there's an old fashioned pagonging that somehow takes place, I want to see how that happens. And I want to see what structures get put in place. Cause we talked a lot about Rob and Sandra, two big powerhouses, but yeah, there people like Denise and Natalie played really, really amazing games in their own right. And I hope we get to see them do something and not just be characters in a story.
It's a great point, Mary. We have all these people there that we want to see. We don't need all this other, seasoning and spices when we have these great ingredients.
It can be healthy and flavorful in its own right.
Yes, we can keep
Mary it. Mary just manifested it. Boston Rob's going to get idol nullified out of the game.
Oh, Mary. Oh, no. Worst case scenario, right?
Sad.
Okay. All right. Jess, any final thoughts on this grouping that we talked about tonight?
I mean, this was a surprisingly fun time that I think I'm so thrilled that I get to be here kicking off our Survivor 40 coverage because there's going to be so much to unpack over the course of the season. And right now we're just kind of flying blind. So the more information that comes out and the more analysis that we get and the more we learn about what's actually going to be the structures in place for the game, I think it's just like every new layer makes it more exciting.
Yeah. And we'll start getting some preseason interviews from Dalton Ross and the press that were out there. If I had to guess, I'd suspect probably if not tomorrow, then next week. So we'll see. We're getting closer and closer to the season 40 premiere date, which is going to be on February 12th. Scally, any other thoughts on this grouping that we're talking about tonight?
No, like Mary said, I'm just excited to see that the season's finally happening, seeing people come back that I never thought would. And I just hope we get to see them play. And I think with the fire tokens, it could be interesting in hopefully, I don't at least I know for me personally, I don't love like the advantage era. And so maybe that will give more of a reasoning into someone has really, you know, played strategically to get the advantage rather than happening upon it. So I'm interested to see how they played out. But most of all, hope to get to see these players play their own game.
Okay. For more on these players, of course, you could check out our Evolution of Strategy. Josh Wigler and myself went through 30 seasons of the show. I re-listened to a lot of that today to get ready for this podcast. You can check those out at evolutionofstrategy.com. It makes for a great way to brush up on all of these old seasons. Tomorrow night, I was corrected. I said that the show was going to be at the same time tomorrow night. It's going to be at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, and we will be talking about Ethan, Yule, Danny, and Sophie. That will be our roundtable tomorrow night, and we'll be joined by Taryn Armstrong, Liana Boris, and Mike Bloom for that roundtable coming up on Wednesday, and then we'll be back for another Circle roundtable coming up on Thursday. So we've got live shows coming for you tonight, Wednesday, Thursday. Very busy week here on Robinson Podcast. Of course, week two of Circle coverage is going to kick off tomorrow. The new Circle episodes are coming up. I believe episodes 5, 6, 7, 8 are going to be dropping after midnight on the West Coast. So Taryn is going to start having our his episode recaps for you for the episodes 5, 6, 7. We'll be back to a recap episode 8 with our week 2 Circle roundtable. So a very exciting week. Of course, you can follow our panel. All right. Of course, Frail Mary at Frail Mary.
Yes.
Okay. Mary, what else do you have going on?
Just releasing backlog episodes of Riverdale, which just got signed on for season 5.
Picked up for season 5.
Still doing this for another couple years. Great. I kind of picked this show because I thought it'd be like a 3-season and done kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it goes on.
No, so Kirsten McInnes and I are just struggling over there. And yeah, my Survivor All-Stars rewatch with Matt Liguori can be found on Kowski Cast as well.
Okay. All right. Jess, how about you?
Well, I am doing some coverage of Star Trek Picard with Mike Bloom over on Post Show Recaps. Yes. And we will be covering in our next podcast, we'll be covering the series of short treks that dropped on CBS All Access and getting very much ready for Picard and then subsequently Star Trek Discovery. That's a good time. I'm also writing some feature articles over at primetimer.com, and you can read something that I wrote about the Jeopardy Greatest of All Time tournament that dropped today. So that's me. And you can follow me on Twitter at Haymaker Hattie.
Are there any married couples participating in the Jeopardy Greatest of All Time tournament?
No, it's just 3 dudes.
Okay. All right. And Scally, what about you?
We are in the challenge off season, but if you're already listening to the wrap up and want more challenge content, I'm podcasting with Matt Liguori about the challenge. We most recently did a draft for the upcoming cast of the 35th season with Colin Stone and RHEP favorite Haley Strong. So that is the most recent thing on the Dom and Colin podcast.
Yeah, everybody is podcasting with Matt Liguori. Popular guy. Okay. All right. Of course, you can get even more discussion about Survivor, the Circle, and everything else going on in our Rob Has a Podcast Facebook group. If you're a patron of Rob's podcast, head on over to robhasawebsite.com/patron. We're talking about everything going on with our season 40 events and much more. All right, robhasawebsite.com/patron. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.